Good afternoon. This is Keeping the Faith. My name is Don Nolan. Steve Shoemaker is not with us this afternoon. He is taking a long and well-deserved vacation. I think he's probably somewhere halfway up to Alaska. Wish we could be joining him. So I wish him well. Today, our topic is current issues for African-American Christian churches here in Champaign-Urbana. And we have with us the Reverend Evelyn Underwood, who is president of the Ministerial Alliance and so many other things in her history and biography and things that she does in this community. And the same for Reverend Zerniel Bogan, who is vice president of the Ministerial Alliance. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having us, Alan.
Well, we have a very large, complex, and convoluted topic, which is got many different ways to go. But before we get to issues facing the African-American Christian Church here in Champaign and Urbana, let's just talk a little bit about your background. Reverend Underwood, you are also a pastor. Where?
Well, I'm Reverend Dr. Evelyn Underwood, and I'm associate. Oh, no problem. No problem. I'm associate minister at New Free Will Baptist Church, where my husband, Bishop King James, well, should I say Senior Bishop King James Underwood, is our pastor. My husband was senior bishop. He's senior bishop currently. Before that, he was general bishop over 9 states, and I worked with him like about 9 years, I think, before he gave it up because of illness. And it's a lot of work, but we enjoyed working with different folk in the various states that he was presiding prelate over. Currently, I serve as vice moderator for the Mount City District. We have about, 15 churches, and I'm vice moderator for that. And in addition, president, as you stated previously, of the Ministerial Alliance of Champaign-Urbana and Vicinity. And people ask, now, what is this Vicinity? I said, because we're bigger than Champaign-Urbana. We have ministers in Danville, Rantoul, and we've had one, I think, as far as during my last 8 or 9 years with the organization as a maybe a few more years than that, but we've had one as far away as Charleston, I think. So that's why we say vicinity.
And Reverend Brogan, you are associate pastor where?
I'm an associate minister at Salem Baptist Church, 500 East Park Street in Champaign. And I've been there with the Reverend Dr. Claudie Shelby Sr. as an associate with him for the last 7 years. And we've been really trying to get things moving in the aspect of making sure that people are aware of what the educational values are, where they can get resources for education, computerization, and that type of thing. And Dr. Shelby is also the president of the Martin Luther King Jr. Advocacy Committee and Scholarship Committee, which you're very well know much about there. And as a matter of fact, Dr. Underwood also sits on that particular committee. And for the Martin Luther King.
Yeah, Bishop Underwood is a member of the larger committee, and Bill Volk and I are co-chair of the scholarship. So we're kind of subcommittee, but Bill and I work together, and he keeps me in line.
So I'm also a theology student of the American Bible College out of Tennessee. We have a extension in the Salem Baptist Church, which, as a matter of fact, I just graduated from last semester. And I'm also a business owner.
Let's talk a little bit more about some of those. Let me just remind the audience who, if you don't know, this is a call-in show, and you're encouraged and welcome to call in with any questions or comments to our guest on the topic this afternoon of current issues for African-American Christian churches. And our number is locally 333-9455. You can also call an 800 number, 800-222-9455. Well, Reverend Bogan, you also have a radio program, as I understand it. You're an expert at this.
Well, I wouldn't say an expert, but yes, I do have a radio program on our sister station here WEFT here in Champaign, or about our community radio. Show called Speak Up, a public affairs show, much like this one, and from 6 to 9 a.m. every Thursday morning, and we just get on the airways and let the people have their say.
Mm-hmm. Reverend Underwood, you have also been on the Urbana School Board, as I understand it. Is that right?
Yes. I guess I have the wonderful, a lot of people say, you were the first African-American, the young people really love that, to be elected to the Board of Education in Urbana, age 25. but we had five kids, my husband and I, we had five children, and mm-hmm. we were very much interested in education. Uh-huh. So I was elected in 1968. I served for four terms on the Urbana Board of Education. I ran for Parks and College Board in 1980. I didn't get elected. But my main thing, I was a farmer's daughter, and I got a lot of votes from the farmers, mm-hmm. but I lost in the city. So we've been involved in education for a number of years. Under the Nixon administration, if you will, I had an opportunity to be invited to Washington, D.C. in the White House, and I, along with a lot more educators and African-American leaders, were able to help set the agenda during that period for America as it relates to education and other issues for the disenfranchised people in America.
Well, why don't we just go ahead and dive in a little bit on some of these issues. Let me read you something. I came across the following description. I don't know if you know Wikipedia. It's you supposedly try to revise and improve on it, on a definition or a description. See if you agree with this. The Black Church continues to be a source of support for members of the African-American community. When compared to American churches as a whole, Black churches tend to focus more on social issues such as poverty, gang violence, drug use, prison ministries, and racism. Black churches are typically conservative on sexuality issues. However, many are pro-choice. For some African Americans, the kind of spirituality learned through these churches works as a protective factor against the corrosive forces of poverty and racism. Do you care for that? If you were to change it, how would you add to it or take away from it? Is that a fair summary? Either one of you, Reverend Bogan? Oh, go ahead.
With me, I thought long and hard about talking about the Black Church. And I really, spiritually, I had to say, wait a minute now. The African-American church and the Christian church, I don't know how that goes together, because Christian should be the major thing, the Christian church. And when we talk about the Christian church, we need to say, hey, how in the world should the Christian church serve the different populations? Now, given the time and just the Democratic Convention, I don't get hung up in politics that much, but we had some historic things happening with Obama and what's been going on. And I really take a hold to that when I saw the diversity. And I really would like to maybe think more broadly that, okay, for an example, in Atlanta, I was just reading something the other night. They did a national search. And the majority of the white people in this church, great big church, they hired an African-American pastor. Here in town, we have a white pastor, pastoring a 99% Black church. So we need to get more into Christianity. Now, of course, the Black church, for years and years, we know the history, we know all that they've been doing. But I want... As president of the Ministerial Alliance, what I've been doing is trying to get Black and white ministers involved, because we've got to stop this Black-white thing, mm-hmm. really. Mm-hmm. When it comes to Christianity, we're one blood, out of one blood. and I'm getting emotional now. I'm going to get ready to preach, but I'm going to try to hold it down.
Sermons would be fine here.
You know, out of one blood, it's, you know, we're all one. We're different colors, but we got the same blood running through these veins. And maybe in that all-black church, well, 99% black with the white pastor, is some love or something they see in him. That's why they're staying there. And vice versa in Atlanta and maybe somewhere close, but I know about this one. With the all-black pastor, all white members, 99% white men, there's something they're seeing in that. And that's what Jesus is talking about. We need to come together. And that's what we're fighting for, if you will, fighting is a strong word, with the Ministerial Alliance. We're trying to get more white and black ministers and pastors, women, and men working together. So the people in the pews, the people in the community, the populations we have sitting in our pews, be that white, black, Latino, or whatever, they can see the love of the ministers. They can see that we're all fighting for the disenfranchised people. That's what we as a Christian church must do.
Mm-hmm. It used to be said that the most segregated hour was Sunday right. morning between 10 and 11 or
That's
whatever.
Right.
That's becoming less and less the case, isn't it, Reverend Bogan?
Well, you know, it's one of those situations where as you take a look at that situation and you look at the church as like being a parent of the black culture. And as that parent is raising children, and it has many children, not all of the children are going to adhere to the advice of the parent. And some children will grow up strong and good, and others may turn away or turn to another direction or may want to, pervert some of the teachings that were brought up in that particular household. And as we look at these particular things and we ask that question about segregated moment, when we have so many televangelists, you know, on the airwaves, and we have so many radio wave ministers now that's almost eradicated, almost, because there are so many households that open up to the different televangelists, to the different radio wave ministers, that now to say that it is segregated, well, on an open front, on a physical front, it may still be that way. But on an area or a front that whereas we're talking about the actual hearing of the word, yes, I think that gap is closing very, very, very much so.
How old is Salem Baptist Church?
Oh, Salem Baptist Church is 145 years old.
Yeah,
right. Wow, we just celebrated that one, if I'm not mistaken.
And, it's second only to Bethel, right?
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
Bethel AME.
Yeah, indeed we are. But I wanted to go back to another point that you were asking inside the definition here that you had given about the black church. And I want to say it's not entirely accurate. It's accurate to the point of what it's saying that we do stand up for. But when you talk about it's kind of lenient or conservative on sexism and things like that, I think that's not accurate, because we cannot uphold talking to the parents and to the children and to the gang members about the church and their behavior if we don't address sexism. So I think that falls into play with the overall conversation of what it means to actually be a person of the word, to actually adhere to what is going on. Even in the gangs, you can't take one part of their rules and don't adhere to the rest of the rules. You know, it's all intertwined. So I think that when we do this, when we say that we're actually focusing on those aspects, we're focusing on all of those aspects. Mm-hmm. Nowhere in the church have I ever heard anyone that has been preaching for any length of time not have a sermon in there that preached about sexism and about the moralities and immoralities of different types of areas of sexism for what we have in our community and in our society on today.
Yeah, we just came off of an election cycle back in 2004 where that was quite the issue. Mm-hmm. Some people say it had a significant impact on the election of George Bush in 2004, but let's not go down
okay,
that
that's another, yes.
Free Will Baptist, what's the history, lineage of Free Will Baptist?
As I stated earlier, we came from the Shakers in England. But one great thing about Free Will Baptist, in studying the history, there was two strands, which I don't want to, you know, get into a lot of detail about here. But the one, you could not be a slave a trader, a slave owner, and be a Free Will Baptist in our strand. You could not, because it didn't work that way.
Mostly
you
northern?
Know. Our strand was kind of northern. And you could not. But down in Cairo, let me see, what's the name of this gentleman? I hope my husband call in and tell me the name of this gentleman. I can't think of his name. But he worked down in the Cairo area in the Free Will Baptist Church. He was a white gentleman, a white minister. And he trained African-American ministers right in the Cairo area and sent them out. And, I mean, that was kind of south. That was just like, you know, going over, then you being
before the
south.
Civil War.
That's right.
Before the Civil War.
Oh, yes, yes. And so it was very courageous. And that's one of our histories, the fact that you could not be a slave owner and be a Free Will Baptist. It just didn't happen. And that's one of the reasons that a lot of people joined the Free Will Baptist movement. Mm-hmm. Now, there was a split, because a lot of people say, hey, we're going to get, it was a money thing, you know, and so they split, and that's how the Free Will Baptists, now there are two strands of them. There's the white Free Will Baptists and the black Free Will Baptists, and I hate that. We need to come together, you know, as Christian folks. You know, that's, I guess, if anything, I wanted to get over it today, because Sunday evenings, we are very afternoons, 5 o'clock is afternoon, I guess. I know it is. We are, you know, at church. But I said, Lord, that for some reason, when Reverend Steve asked me, you know, I asked my pastor, could I come on this show? Because if something on the inside, I say, I really need to be on this program. I've been on years ago, but it's been a long time.
To address the label.
To address the fact that the Christian church is not a place for networking. Being the member of this church, you know, then I can get a job here or there. We've got to stop that. It's a spiritual thing. We need to save souls for the kingdom. And that is so important. And we've gotten away from what the Christian church, what does Christian mean? Christ-like. We need to get back to that. And of course, some of the things, you know, jobs, of course we need to preach about that. The economy, what's going on, education, prisons, gangs, what's going on in Iraq and all of that. But the most important thing is saving souls for the kingdom. And the people who don't know the Lord, I don't care what color they are, we need to accept them. Now, we can say we're going to go out and help those poor people in that neighborhood. But we don't really want them here in our church. You know, we have, and it shouldn't be. We're all one blood. We're all from Adam and Eve. And I think we need to get back to that. Evelyn, that's so, Reverend Dr. Underwood, that's so simplistic. But it's the most important, it's the thread throughout what the Christian church is all about. And we need to get back to that.
Let me just remind the audience that this is a call-in show, and our topic for today is the current issues in the African-American Christian church, which we should revise to read current issues in the Christian church, according to Reverend Evelyn Underwood, who is president of the Ministerial Alliance here in Champaign. And we also have with us the vice president of the Ministerial Alliance, Reverend Zerniel Bogun. And if you'd like to call in to talk to our guest about this topic, you can call 333-9455. We also have an 800 number, 1-800-222-9455. At the risk of, I don't know where you want to go with that particular point. I certainly understand your point. But I was hoping with your background, both of your background in education, that we might start off talking a little bit about education and the importance of that for churches in this community. There are significant disparities between the performance of African-American children in this community compared to those of other demographic groups. How are churches dealing with that issue in particularly public schools?
Well, you know, I'm glad that you even brought that issue up when it comes to education. I sit on the CARE 3 committee, which is the Equity Excellence in Education. And we're thriving.
For the church?
And no, that's a separate committee and organization. It has to do and had really it came about with the consent decree that was formed in
Champaign.
And and prior to that, I was sitting on the steering committee, the equity steering committee for the Champaign School Board.
Urbana School Board,
and with Dr. Reverend Underwood, she was the president at the time when I was there with that, and we continued with that. And I see that. You know, we have such a parallel thing going on when it comes to education in both cities, though one may be more focused than the other because of the consent decree that's in court. The parallel is so unique in this particular area because we have in the midst of the two cities, the University of Illinois. And with the University of Illinois being so diverse and so well-renowned in knowing that educational value is of the utmost in any community, there's such a massive disparity in the educational input from the University of Illinois into the community. When you have such a disparity like that, yeah, I know people will say, well, each particular entity is responsible for its own. But when you have two communities that is focusing on the overall growth of another community, which is the University of Illinois, and it looks to be a separate community within its own, and it is the pinpoint of what is really going on in these twin cities, there should be a dynamic that is working there, that the educational upkeep of all three communities is kept at such a pace that there is no disparity, that there is no especially when it comes to those who are minorities. Because what better area or what better place can you get resources for helping in education than from the University of Illinois? You know, but we don't have that. And so we look at things inside of our schools when it comes to high crime. Well, naturally, everyone wants to say, well, that comes out of the upkeep of where they're coming from and where they're living, which is true. And that has a large part to play. But it's not the whole factor. And we cannot and we have to stop pointing our fingers at that one particular issue and look at all the factors that actually make the downplay or the disparity in the education realm within our children. And that has to start right there, not just at the home, but not only at the home. It has to start at the home and the education gate all at the same time. When we wait for the home to pick up where the education gate starts or wait for the education gate to pick up where the home starts, the gap just keeps growing larger. We have to have those responsible persons in education that has to say, listen, this is the pinnacle in which we need to come to be able to have a resource so that all persons, those persons who are unable to get education because of lack of funds and a socioeconomic stance, those persons who have been disenfranchised and can't get education because of criminal background and they're trying to get themselves adequated in such a way that they're improving their overall educational values within themselves and for their better livelihood, those persons who are transient into our community. See, all these things play a factor, a major factor on the disparity of what's in schools today in Champaign and Urbana. Because if you don't have an overall cap that can look at this magnification of influx of people coming in, people going out, university not putting in, and then the university will definitely have an overall effect on that when they don't put in to a situation where you have two schools who are yearning and burning for resources. We just had we just had our report from the Urbana school about on the overall test results for the educational wise of the overall black students. Mm-hmm. Well.
Required by No Child Left Behind.
Yes. And see, but the overall picture is this. We hear them say that 23% or 27% of all the students pass. But wait a minute. That's 27% of what amount of black students in that factor? See, that isn't brought out. So if you're only saying, well, 27% of 10 students, something is wrong there. That's nothing to get, for you to get patted on the back for. That's something for us to be saying, wait a minute, there's a real problem here because it's not just like that there in Urbana. It's like that in Champaign, too. And so in between, we have the university. What can we do between all three of these educational resource factors to be able to bring that up to par? To whereas we know that we're having an equal educational excellence and equity being brought forth not only with just white students, but with black children also.
Reverend Underwood, What are local churches doing to help the schools address this performance gap? Anything? I know that there's some...
Definitely.
Some churches that have started separate academies, private schools,
oh, yeah.
Isn't that right?
That too. But what I am... And that's an important aspect, like, you know, Judah, and there's a non-Judah Christian school and the Canaan Academy. You know, we have a lot of different schools, but the public schools...
Describe the Canaan Academy.
Oh, Canaan Academy is pre-K, early childhood, I think, through fifth grade, and they're working in cooperation now with Judah Christian, because Judah Christian go all the way up to through 12th grade. And you know, that's important. But I'm interested in the public schools. I am interested in public schools, and we need to see that our public schools stay intact. And we need to do whatever we can, and we are doing some things. The Ministerial Alliance. One concern with the Ministerial Alliance that the people brought to us, and I'm just going to read this quickly. This is from our newsletter. I have to do this to stay on task because I'm emotional about these things. Community members have brought concerns to the Ministerial Alliance about, number one, the tuition hike at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, which was with the economy as is and the middle class even, the people losing their homes and all of that. And the tuition hike at University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, Unit 4 consent decree scheduled to end in June 2009. And are there Board of Education policies in place to continue the stride that have been made? And what is this vision committee? That's what people were wondering. They're going to do a report on that the 8th, the vision committee, all about. I was one of the people on the facilitation mm-hmm. committee. I was one of those. Reverend Nash. It's the facilitation committee. We went and facilitated the meetings and the like, and we had on different subjects. Mm-hmm. And I was one of the facilitators for that. Reverend Nash was on the vision committee. He's from the Ministerial Alliance. He was on the vision committee. Reverend Shelby is on the PIC, the Plan and Implementation Committee. Mm-hmm. So the Ministerial Alliance is very involved in all of those areas. Now, in Urbana School District 116, the Equity Committee, and how should the Board of Education decide to restructure the high school? Now they're saying that they don't have to restructure because after, you know, 5 years, they didn't make AYP, and now they may.
AYP, not everybody knows what that
is. Oh, I'm sorry. It's annual yearly progress.
Okay.
The Federal No Child, right. For the Federal No Child Left Behind. And they take the test. The name of the test is the Prairie State Achievement Test. And those results have come out in Urbana. Made it, and we congratulated them, you know, on making it. However, we were saddened to see that there were unwarranted disparities. Two-thirds of the African-American kids didn't make it.
Right, yeah.
You know, they were low, like 27.3 in math and 29.1 in reading. So that means 70-some% of them did not. But we're interested in all children. All children make it. I'm a teacher, retired teacher, you know, from Urbana School District 116, mm-hmm. as well as a board member. So we're concerned about public education. We're concerned about Parkland College. A lot of our students who are going to Parkland, they have, by the time they finish getting into, they're in the low-level classes. What do you call those? The 93. By the time they get in the regular classes, they've used up all their financial aid. Mm-hmm. Something got to give. There got to be better articulation mm-hmm. between the school district in Champaign-Urbana and Parkland College.
Well, let me ask both of you this question. There are so many other issues we can get to, but just briefly. I did know Vern Barkstall, and I'm sure you did too.
Yes.
And Vern came here probably, I forget now, he died about 10 years ago, isn't that right?
Yes.
He was here 45 years ago. So would you, if Vern Barkstall were here today, would you say, he would say that there's been significant improvement or not in these areas?
Personally, I think he would say that there has been a seesaw effect of improvement. Whereas for the and what I mean by that is, I think Vernon would have said that we can't put a cap on significant improvement yet because it hasn't been there long enough for us to gauge. To put it in Vernon's words.
Now, I think Vern would think that we have not made progress. My dear John Lee Johnson, my dear Herb Stevens, the white men and the black men that work together to change things in this community. Both of them are going home with the Lord now. But I'm telling you, they did a work in this community. And
just a little history for our audience. Those two gentlemen were instrumental in causing the consent decree to happen, and not everybody in our audience knows what that is. What is a consent decree in just a few words?
Okay,
for Champaign Unified School.
And what happened is they found that Champaign schools were not coming up. You probably know better because I think you were on the board. Do you mind
yes,
me saying that? You probably know better what happened with John and Herb. Found they used teachers and all, and they were able to find that the kids were failing. In Champaign, the African-American children were failing miserably and had been doing so for a number of years.
Discipline
and they were a discipline, too. There were maybe four areas. I can't think of
placement.
What they... Yes. Mm-hmm. And in gifted. Maybe two out of all the African-American children were in gifted. And I mean, it just didn't make sense when there were professional people here in this community and their children who happened to be African-American, they still were not able to be in a gifted program. But anyway, they had a plaintiff class that brought a suit. And then when they brought the suit, it was settled. There was a lot of things that happened, but they decided not to go to court because they had too much evidence. And they would have lost, from what I understand. And so they had a settlement. A lot of people said, well, they shouldn't have done that. But they did the right thing. I think they would have spent maybe five times more funds if they hadn't had that consent decree. And it's been since 1998, is it? Was it 1998?
I think that's right.
Something like that. And they're doing some things, but they still haven't done as much as they should be doing as related to African-American students, especially with the SROs. That's one of the biggest mistakes I think they ever made.
SRO. With putting
the SROs
right.
is a security resource officer. There's another word, safety resource officers, or something like that. But what they should have done... And I talk to people at the university, and I talk to people at Indiana University who have studied this issue. And what we said at the Ministerial Alliance, what they should do, and other groups, that they should have done like the University of Illinois. Only call the regular police in if it's bad enough. They should have got a security department, safety and security department, like a PE department, and let those folk take care of what they needed to take care of as relates to discipline. The police must arrest. That's what they've sworn to do. And our kids, this is in the middle school. They're getting records. We didn't want to do that to our university students. They're going to be doctors and lawyers and all. That's why we got the university police. That's why we got the university police, because we didn't want to give these kids records at the university when they're going out with jobs. Now we're giving records to our middle schoolers, 11-year-olds. It shouldn't be.
One more question related to this, and let's move on to another issue. Why is this an issue for the Christian church? Why do you, as reverends, care about this?
Well, let me interject this portion about the consent decree to answer the question a little bit more so that our audience can pick it up. A consent decree is basically when two parties come together and the plaintiff has made a charge against the defendant, and the two parties come to a agreement. And in that agreement, they both sign this contract to perform certain duties within a certain amount of time. That's basically what a consent decree is. And as Dr. Underwood has put it, there were certain things inside this decree that the school system said they would do that they did not do and have not done as yet. But for whatever various reason it may have been, this is what the whole problem that starts right now. When we look at this and we ask, well, why is the church so why is this so important to the churches? Well, first of all, if it's not an issue for the church, then we will be failing our own children, because we're saying to our children that we don't care if you don't get adequate education. We don't care if you're being treated underhandedly. We don't care if when you go to school, the proper equipment isn't given to you, the proper teaching isn't given to you. We don't care. And the church is not going to let that happen.
But what if someone said to you, you should just stick to teaching people to be saved?
The whole man.
Why should you go outside of teaching people to be saved and to be members of the kingdom, as you said earlier.
And
bother other people in public schools with the disparities between black and white children.
You know, it says in a word, in our word, it says that my people perish because of lack of knowledge. That, in a nutshell, tells you the whole story right there. It is our duty to make sure that our people, all people, are educated in all areas of life so that they can have an abundant life, so that they can go through life not scratching in the grounds or scratching in garbage cans, not being bag ladies or paper carton housings and things like this. This is what it's about. It's so important. It's one of the mainstays of saving.
And you use the expression whole man.
The whole man. And I think it's important. We have to, the spiritual is, of course, first. Once we get the spiritual, our relations right with God, then everything else will work out because we're going to work it. Mm-hmm. We have to keep working it. And that's why all races is so important. I'm from the backwoods of Mississippi. Came here when I was 10 years old. When I was 3 and 4 years old, I had to carry the dipper. Maybe people don't understand. We were sharecroppers. You know, so if you knew what I had to go through, you know, if I didn't have God, I would have a lot of hate. You know, my dad was in World War II. When he came home, couldn't, you know, he was still called the N-word. And you know what I'm saying? After he could, but because I had Christ and my family had the Lord, you know, we were able to deal with a lot of things. Anyway, I said all that. I'm from the backwoods of Mississippi. When I came here, I was 10 years old, and I went to all black schools. And then when I went to Champaign Middle School or whatever, it was junior high then. That was the first time I went to school with whites.
Champaign High School, wasn't it?
I think it's the high school for 1 year. And then they had the junior high school. It was something going on. They were building something. I can't remember. But I'm 65, so, you know, it was a lot of years ago. But anyway, I didn't know how to interact, and they didn't know how to interact with me. And we had to learn. I had my first white friend, Carol Carpenter, at Urbana High, you know, and I got it. I said, well, why do you have a friend? And they was one. Why she had? Because we liked each other. You know, we interacted with each other. We found something. I went to her house, but she had to come to my house. She had to see how I lived in the ghetto, and her father was a teacher, so I had to see how she lived. You know, and that's what we need to get. That's what I want. That's what we need to work for. That's what, as president of the Ministerial Alliance, we want all of these white and black ministers working together. Because some of the white ministers, one lady minister said, my daughter, she can't hardly learn in a situation where there aren't policemen. You know? Mm-hmm. So we're all facing this together. Go on, Beth.
And let me also interject this in that our history is one that is so rich. When we grew up as children, we seen the transmitter, we seen the tubes, we seen the diode, we seen the microchip all come into play. We seen the color TV before it was a color TV. We seen all of this. We seen Malcolm X walking and preaching in the street. We seen him before he did that.
You were from New York.
I was born and raised in New York City. Mm-hmm. We seen Dr. Martin Luther King walking and talking in the streets. We seen these people in there. We seen Bobby Kennedy doing his thing in the streets. We seen all of this. Our children today don't understand that these people gave their blood for that. This is something we cannot let die. We must get them to understand that the blood that was given for that, the rivers that are running red for that, is for their improvement, for their betterment.
I want to come right back to that just a minute. For our listeners, we're talking with Reverend Evelyn Underwood, who is president of the Ministerial Alliance, and Reverend Zerniel Bogan, who is vice president of the Ministerial Alliance here in Champaign-Urbana. And our topic is current issues for African-American Christian churches. We now need to slash African-American, or African. If you would like to call in with a question or comment to either one of our guests on this topic, the number is 333-9455. Or you can call 800-222-9455. Reverend Bogan, you were talking about the rich tradition of the African-American church, and this is more or less in response to my rhetorical question about why don't you just focus on spiritual issues and don't worry about social. I'm impressed, have always been impressed by how much the African-American church in this country has to teach us about how to deal with church and state. Oh, and there's sure. some people who think that that line should be separate, and other people think that it should be erased or at least dissolved to such an extent that church gets too involved in government. Many people complain about that with our last administration. How would you advise someone who would say to you, you should have a strong separation of church and state, because clearly the African-American church has not, simply for reasons of survival, if nothing else?
To me, it, from my standpoint and from having lived it, that's easy. You cannot. As long as our jails continue to thrive, with 78% of it being black people and minorities, you cannot. There will not be a separation, because it becomes a factory thing when you're transporting that many people in and out of an institution simply to make money and keep the status quo for what you want. As I say to most people that come and ask me, that's simply a modern-day slave ship on dry land. Mm. And when you begin to understand that terminology of what I'm saying, that ideology of what I'm saying, you begin to see that that's exactly what's happening. They're slave trading. That they're doing nothing no more than transferring our black people, our minority people, backwards and forwards into this, and then they disenfranchise them when they do so. They give them a record now that they say that, well, you can't get this type of job and you can't do this type of thing and you can no longer do that. And we're talking about for crimes as little as driving. You know, and once you get a felony mark, that's all they want you to do. What Dr. Underwood alluded to some already about our children in school with these SROs in the schools. Well, a police officer is there for one reason and one reason only, and that's to police. He's not there to be a social consultant. He's not there to give advice on spirituality or morality. He's there to uphold the law. And I don't care if you're 20 or if you're 2. If you're breaking the law, he's going to do his job. That's what he's there to be paid for. Once it goes on record, it's on record. There's no taking it back. And when we're doing this to our young children, we're disenfranchising them before they even step into it. So no, there is no separation.
So the church has an investment in this.
Deeply.
Deep and historical.
Deeply.
Now, the graduation rate, as I understand it, has improved somewhat, hasn't it, over the past decade to two decades for black kids in our local high schools?
Yes, according to what we've read in the paper, you know, I haven't done my personal research, but according to what we read in the paper, yes. But then we have to watch this. Okay, a lot of the students are in the Reddys and the Columbia schools and, you know, off in these alternative schools where, you know, they're not getting what they should get. And if they were, then I believe that they would be able to go to District 505, mm-hmm. Parkland College, you know. And that's why it really upsets me when we're thinking globally, which we should. There's nothing. But on the other hand, we've got kids in our own back door, in our own backyard, and we're paying extra in Champaign-Urbana area for 505, District 505. Oh, if we hit on the one. We're paying extra District 505. And we should be, our kids should be able to go. And they should be able to go and be able to go for 2 years and then transfer to Eastern or wherever, and they shouldn't have to stay there for 4 years before they can get a two-year education. And then no financial aid to go anyplace else because they've used it all because they're in the 09, 01 or 09, whatever. They're not able to get up in the...
Well, I bring up the graduation rate, which is just abysmal. I think across the country it's less than 50%, isn't that right, even still? And it's mm-hmm. barely improved nationally. I think this, mm-hmm. Illinois has done better than most states, I understand. But the reason I bring it up, there's a pretty good correlation between not graduating from high school and getting on that school-to-prison track and getting on that school-to-unemployment and idleness track.
True.
And so these are all connected in subtle and complex ways. Why don't we talk a little bit about another issue altogether? Let's talk a little bit about health care. What interest does the church have in health care?
I should mention that with the Ministerial Alliance, we have three co-directors of education. Mm-hmm. We have co-directors of everything, you know, because they are leading the fight, if you will, for those areas. For healthcare, we have three co-directors for healthcare, because that's an important issue. We've got, education, healthcare, and a lot of more things, but healthcare is very important. And we know that in America, I went to that movie. What was it? A guy named Moore? Moore talking about
Sicko.
Right. Yes, you know, and really a lot of people say, oh, just don't live. But a lot of the things there were truths, a lot of truths in that. I'm not an expert in the healthcare, but we have people who work in those areas who report to the Ministerial Alliance at large. Reverend Bogan, would you like to talk a little bit about some of the things we've done with the healthcare?
As being a person who also is the vice president of the Champaign County Black Chamber of Commerce, healthcare is a major issue, period. In the black churches, we see that whereas when a child is not adequately cared for by the parents or can't go and get adequate health care, how it devastates the whole family. When we're talking about getting a child over to Francis Nelson is so overwhelmed now,
right.
They don't take any new patients in. They just cannot. Provena is getting ready to open up this program on campus, whereas you can come in as a clinic after hours. The healthcare is so devastating where persons like myself who have their own business and you can't afford to pay the actual premiums and costs of healthcare. When you go to the emergency room, the average emergency room cost, and we're not talking about the ambulance, just the average emergency room cost, and you might be there 4 or 5 hours, is $875. Then you have an additional $400 to $500 cost for your ambulance carrying. That's $1,000 just for a 4 to 5 hour visit, for which the normal person or the normal minority cannot afford. They can barely afford to have food for breakfast and lunch to give the kids to go to school. And we're talking about now something that is so horrendous because these children, on my show last week, I read an article about measles. Now, you would think measles was just about eradicated along with polio, but the article is saying that the universities are showing and the CDC is showing that 132 new cases of measles are being brought up. And the majority of that is because parents with lacking the education, the knowledge of knowing that they need to have these vaccinations are not getting the kids vaccinated. Mm-hmm. You know, so, yes, healthcare is paramount without a doubt.
Do you know what the disparities are? What are the figures? What's the life expectancy rate of African-American males and females? Do you know?
I know it's a lot lower.
It's about 8 or 9 years lower, isn't it?
Yes.
Something to that effect. And I know with the PSAs, the African-American men, a lot of more of them are getting not taking the PSAs. That's why they're doing it now at the barber shops and other places like that, and with the women, the breast cancer and some of the other cancers, and the age, HIV, and it's just
lots
monumental.
Lots of money going overseas.
So we've got to change that. When I was in law school, and I really learned, I couldn't believe it. When I saw that people were okay, with sending our jobs overseas. Now, something got to change. We need a change, and the attitude. But I think the middle-class people are seeing now, because a lot of my middle-class friends, that's white and black, they're having problems. Big problems with being able to, afford the gas. Yes. And other things, but we've got all of this. Don't let me get on this. I've got to read my notes.
It's so important.
It's so important that we've got the oil field, and they won't pump it because they want to keep the economy as is for some crazy reason. The reasons I read, you know, in this last report, I've got a book now. I said, now, what is he talking about? But you can go on why.
You know, Don, I think you
about this book.
You brought up a very good point about the amount of monies that we're spending overseas. And when we're looking at the overall money that we spent in a week to fund the war effort, or within the last year to fund the war effort in Iraq, and we're talking trillions, not just $1 trillion, but several trillion dollars for the year. Now, when anyone who has gone to school, they understand that it takes so many billions to make a trillion, as it does or so many millions to make a billion. Well, if we were to take just $1 billion of that trillion that we use, or trillions that we use to send overseas for the Iraqi war effort, and place it into health care, just so that the children around in the neighborhoods throughout the United States could get adequate vaccinations. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about vaccines that have been sitting on the shelf for months at a time that hasn't been utilized. We're talking about fresh vaccinations, fresh vaccine. Persons who are going in for flu virus and need fresh flu vaccine. We would be able to eradicate that across the United States.
Well, we've only got about 8 more minutes. How do you all chime in on this debate that has been going on since Bill Cosby first got into this, that many people on the right have picked up on? This is a matter of personal responsibility for the individual. Why should the state or the church be involved in this? You should be taking personal responsibility for your own development, your own health. You should be engaged in preventive activities rather than unhealthy activities. Now, how does the church weigh in on this at all? How do you feel about this?
I look at it in a way that is more fundamental to what Bill is saying. You do have to take personal responsibility. The word says that if a man does not work, he should not eat. Well, what does that mean exactly? You know, we're talking about being responsible. We're talking about walking down the streets in a presentable manner with your pants pulled up, you know, in society. We're talking about going to work with the proper attire on so that one would be able to say, yes, he's ready and willing to do his job and do it adequately.
Church does a lot of
advocating that. Right. Yes, indeed. And this is what it's all about. Teaching one how to actually be presentable in the area that they're going to try to get a career in. Those things are so very, very important. And yes, the church can only teach so much, just like any parent. But that person, that child, has to take personal responsibility, and it has to be able to stand up on its own and see that the things that are being taught to it are going to be worthwhile in its overall gain in this world. You can't keep refusing the hand that keeps feeding you and feeding you the right thing and just sitting back waiting for someone to give you something.
Mm-hmm. It's both and. Yes.
But you know what? Historically, we know my grandmother took care of old master's house and his children before, and old master, it wasn't slavery time, but it was the sharecroppers. Mm-hmm. My grandmother was a teacher.
Reconstruction time.
No, it was after that. I was a child. It was
back when you were a child.
Yeah, when I was a child, it was after Reconstruction. I'm only 65, but this was in the late 40s and 50s. Mm-hmm. My grandmother took care. We were on sharecroppers. She had to go take care of old master's house and then come back and get us ready for the school. You know, but she didn't do the kitchen stuff. I have to be honest. She was a teacher, trained as a teacher. So she was teach their kids, you know, help their kids academically. You know, and then they had the people who did the washing, ironing, cooking, and all of that. And then they had to go take care of their children. So we know about work.
Take care of their children first. See, and that was the whole problem.
I know, but then they came and had to take care of us. So that means she had to get up very early. So we were brought up, in my generation, we were brought up knowing how to work, knowing how to do what we need to do. However, we taught our children, I taught my children that they are as good as anybody else.
Oh, yes.
I taught, you know, it was 68 when my children was in school. We had desegregation in Urbana, 56 in Champaign. But it was 1966, because I was elected to the board in 68. 66, you know, when they had desegregation. So our children, you know, we trained them they were as good as anybody else. And once you do that, they believe that. They grew up believing that. But then when they saw that the promises weren't kept, you know, and they got turned off. And then the self-esteem got low. And then they saw these...
whole history after 1954 and the integration of schools.
That's
and
right.
So many black teachers were put out on the streets, no jobs.
That's right. That's right, because we wanted integration. And I still believe that we made the right decision. There are some people feel that we didn't, mm-hmm. because a lot of things were lost. Now... okay.
We've got about 2.5 more minutes. Okay. Let's just talk a little bit about the future. How is the membership holding up? Are you growing? What are the issues for the youth staying involved? A lot of mainstream churches across the country are seeing a lot of youth go to other areas besides traditional churches. So how are you doing in terms locally of membership and growth?
I think that our churches are growing, and I think that the youth are, although they may be, as some say, going to other areas, if they really look at it, those areas are still the church. It may be more of a youth-oriented church, but they're still the church. And as long as they are staying in the church and staying in the Word, it's just going to be even stronger. And as those persons who are dying out in the church are replaced with other persons that come in and join, it continues to grow the church. So I think the church itself is, on the whole, on a growth pattern.
How is Salem doing in terms of numbers?
Well, Salem is doing okay. It's
Over the past decade, since
I've been there, Salem is has declined, but it has come up again and again, because you have those members who are older members who have died off or moved away for whatever reason it may be. But then you have those who replace them who are younger and coming in, and then children that are born into the church.
Mm-hmm. If I could just, you know, say a little something about the Ministerial Alliance. There are two compelling themes that undergird our work. Give meaning to our mission and compel us to press on in the face of countless obstacles and resistance. First, we understand completely that at the foot of the cross, all ground is level. That is, we're all equal in God's eyes, and He alone has the last word. Second, we hold to the promises that we all must take part in the pursuit of the American dream. And as we continue to collectively work to open access for all, we recognize that all have a role in the process. You may ask, what can I do? And I can say plenty. And my time is up, but you can do plenty. You can call me at 367-8215 if you want. If you're a missionary, if you're a Sunday school superintendent, we're using all those to help their pastors, to help get out.
Thank you so much. We've been talking with Reverend Evelyn Underwood, President of the Ministerial Alliance, and Reverend Zernio Bogan, Vice President of the Ministerial Alliance, on current issues for African-American Christian churches. Thank you all both. You're just a wonderful couple of guests. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you.
See you again next week for Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, a production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants. When do we most need our leaders? In times of crisis? Times of war? I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, Winston Churchill's biographer Martin Gilbert explains how the man who offered his nation only blood, sweat, toil, and tears made it believe that was enough. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7. There are 370 million indigenous people around the world. Compared with the general population of their countries, they have higher rates of infant mortality, less access to education, and limited participation in government. Monday on Focus 580, we'll review the effort to secure the rights of these marginalized groups with Dr. Julian Berger, coordinator of the Indigenous and Minorities Unit at the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. I'm David Inge, Focus 580 at 11.
WILL programs are funded in part by a grant from TK Service Center, 806 Perkins Road in Urbana, performing computerized engine diagnostics, alignments, brake, suspension, preventive maintenance, and other repairs. A shuttle service is also available. More information is available at 344-0800.
You're listening to WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana.
From PRI.